Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast for December 14th, 2009. My special guest this week is Michael Colucci, who is the artistic director at Red Twist Theater. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Tom.
You guys are having a terrific year.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. It's sometimes you never know how these things are going to go, but everything's going very well for us. We opened our season with Lettuce and Lovage and had a great run with that. And then, you know, we're in the midst of our production of The Pillow Man, and it's been a great success.
Yes. Well, Lettuce and Lovage, I think you're in award territory with that show.
I'm glad you feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Jan Allen Graves and Millicent Hurley were just outstanding.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You know, Jan and Millicent were the happy middle-aged female couple who are the crux of that play, and they just did a fantastic job. It was great to have Millie here as a guest artist. I had seen her in the Eclipse production of Autumn Garden, and of course she works around town everywhere all the time, so I was very fortunate to catch her in that show. And shortly thereafter I told her that Steve Scott was directing Lettuce and Lovage, and she read the play and loved it. For some reason hadn't read it. You know, sometimes we actors miss great plays over the years, and that was one of the plays that was under her radar. She just hadn't been aware of it.
Wow.
Never saw it, never read it, and finally, you know, when she did read it, she just fell in love with it and the character. And, you know, she did a great job on stage as Lettuce.
Well, that's a very, very tough role to do. It was originally written for Maggie Smith.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can YouTube that. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I actually...
Yes, I saw parts of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah. They have, you know, an actual performance on stage with Maggie and Margaret Tyback. It's just an iconic performance that Maggie Smith gave, and it's just brilliant. Even on YouTube, it's so much fun to watch.
But you know what's cool is when Court did it, they brought in a couple of New York actors, a New York actress to play that role. They didn't know about her, did they?
No, they didn't know about Millie.
Yeah.
But we got her, and we're really fortunate for that.
So after that, now you're, of course, in Pillow Man, and
right.
Congratulations on selling out just about every night.
Well, thanks. It's been just a delight. I mean, to experience a smash hit runaway train production like this is just a joy, and it really makes everything else worthwhile. All of the, you know, fits and starts and failures and falling on your face and getting back up and one step forward and two steps back, you know, all of that is worthwhile when you have something like this. And they don't come along often, as
right.
You know.
Well, I want to talk about a lot of things, but Pillow Man, you've extended till February 6th.
Right. So we had the original run, which goes through December 27. So in a couple of weeks, we'll wrap up the original run. And come, you know, the new year, we'll embark upon our six-week extension.
And you're running what days? Tell us when you're running.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8, and Sunday matinee at 3. Now, but, of course, we're closing on the Saturday because Super Bowl is February 7th. So we can't compete with that, no matter how good it is.
I guess. Let's talk about Red Twist Theater, because you guys have, over the past couple of years, you know, there's a lot of theater groups are kind of staying the same, treading water. Some of them are getting a little better. Some of them have dying out slightly. But you guys are on that upward curve.
Well, I think we are. And I think it's because I learned from a mistake or two that I had made, because I finally wised up that I wasn't the ideal director for every show around here. You know, I mean, Jan and I, husband and wife, mom and pop shop that it is, did most of the, you know, producing and directing for the first several years. And, you know, after a while you realize, well, that's not my forte for this particular show. And, you know, truth be told, I'm certainly not, you know, an A-list director in town on any level, you know, when you compare.
Yet you did some terrific productions.
Well,
yeah.
Well, thanks. Yeah. But as far as the people we have now, when you look at Steve Scott or Kimberly Senior, Jimmy McDermott, you know, the people who have been directing with us most recently are the top directors.
Michael Rychek, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been really fortunate with that.
Well, was that a conscious decision on your part?
Very much so. When I was a new member of the Jeff AT team, the artistic and technical team, which judges opening night side by side with some of the Jeff committee themselves, I was fortunate to go to a lot of shows and to take a look at some of the best work that was being done in town. And, you know, when I saw a Steve Scott production or a Kimberly Senior production, I would always follow up with them and send them a note or an email saying, hey, you know, I really enjoyed your production of, well, in the case of Luke Conte at Timeline, Paradise
yeah.
Lost. I
yeah.
love that show.
Yes, and that was terrific.
And Lou and I have since made an acquaintance, and there's always a possibility he may work with us at some point. But I'm pretty diligent about keeping in touch with people whose work I've come to admire and, you know, whom I respect as professionals in this town. And, you know, when I suggest a play like Lettuce and Lovage for Steve or The Pillow Man for Kimberly, they say yes, just because, you know, we're a reasonably reputable theater, albeit very small. In other words, we do pretty good quality work and we're committed to excellence. So they recognize that and they appreciate that.
Well, that's a smart decision on your part, you know, to realize that, because so many smaller theater companies, they don't get out to see other plays. And you were kind of the same way. You're trapped here every night.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I was really uninformed in terms of what was going on in town because of the fact that this place, as small as it is just all consuming. And Jan and I were, you know, busy just running this place and keeping the doors open and staying in business. But finally, when it was, you know, required that I go see shows and, you know, attend the opening night of this show or that show and, you know, submit my votes as part of the Jeff team, it was really a blessing because I had to get out and see shows and meet people and start, you know, networking with folks. And, you know, one thing led to another. So some of those contacts have been really terrific for us.
Well, that's great. And you can sure tell that they like coming here and working. Now, when they come here, do you hire them as a director? Are they required to use your actors or is it up to them? Or how does that process work?
Well,
you do have an ensemble.
Yeah, right. We're an ensemble-based company. And, you know, with regard to the several shows that I've worked on with Steve or Kimberly or Jimmy, I did have a nucleus of a cast, you know, for the core roles, the leading roles. And all of them, thank goodness, just simply said, yes, of course, that's fine, because they had known of some of the actors that I was proposing for, you know, the key roles. And they knew of their names or had seen them on stage and knew they were quality people. So some of the, you know, the beginnings of the projects that I put together for these really good directors, they were very accommodating.
Well, that's
But there's
great.
Certainly no requirement. But you know,
well, that's good, because there are situations, I've talked to directors that get stuck in situations where, you know, all the key roles have to be ensemble members.
I see.
And sometimes they're not, you know, the right ones for the role.
Well, I'm certainly not going to start dictating to Steve Scott. I mean,
that's,
you know, he
true.
Gets what he wants.
Yeah.
But when I did mention the people I suggested for both Shadowlands in September of 2008 and Lettuce and Lovage 1 year later, just a few months ago, he was very accommodating and embraced those people I mentioned.
Well, yeah, but you certainly had your A-list people in those.
Right, with Jan and Millie and yeah, Lettuce, and yeah. Then, of course, in Shadowlands, yeah. as you remember,
yes.
Brian Parry, who's
yeah.
our leading man,
yeah.
And Jacqueline Grant, who's just a terrific young woman who plays all of our, you know, youngish, middle-aged leading roles.
You know, she's outstanding.
She is. She's yeah. just, and I mean, you know, we have her, but she's surely going to be working at the top houses in town very soon.
Again, she's another one like Brian that I can't understand why they're not working the top houses.
Well, Jacqueline picks and chooses her shows because she and her husband run a very successful business.
Okay.
They have a custom fishing rod company called Grant, G-R-A-N-D-T, Grant Industries, and they're very successful. Jim is a self-made man. They're both, you know, young, middle-aged folks and very, very busy. And, you know, we're just fortunate to have her for one or two shows a year. So she doesn't have too much time otherwise. And she just enjoys being on stage at Red Twist because this is her home space.
Yeah. Know? Chicago is a place where there's an awful lot of people who want to be actors and want to contribute and perform and do art, but don't necessarily care if it's a living. I mean, they're successful in other areas.
Yeah. You know, it's nice to just to be able to do the shows you enjoy doing. And when you have a theater company of your own, you can pick and choose projects in accordance with your tastes and desires. So you can say, yeah, I want to do Blanche or I want to do Stanley. And you can do it. And nobody's going to say, well, no, you can't do that show. Provided you can get the rights, you can do Streetcar or any, you know, great, great play that you've been wanting to do over the years. And quite frankly, Tom, that's why Jan and I opened the company, because we were on the circuit, auditioning around town. And, you know, I know that I'm not going to be able to do some roles in this town because of other people who are simply better than me and would, you know, be cast in a particular role before I would. So I said, well, let's open our own little place and do the shows we want to do. So we did.
And that's great. And that seems to be a Chicago spirit, because these kids, groups from a college, will all come to Chicago and just start creating art.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where the innovative things happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at all the folks who have come from Northwestern or DePaul and began theater companies on their own, or even the folks from the house who began, I believe it was down in Texas, was it
not?
Yeah,
Southern Methodist, I think.
Right,
I think
right. So they came up here and really took Chicago by storm, and, you know, God bless them. It's really just wonderful to see.
But the progression for you guys, let's go into how you pick plays. I mean, Marvin's Room, The Goat, or Who is Sylvia? Ride Down Mount Morgan, Waiting for Godot. I mean, these are great plays.
Well, I think so. You know, we haven't had successful productions with all of them. For example, the Ride Down Mount Morgan, which we had great hopes for because it's a very obscure and esoteric Arthur Miller play, very rarely done. But it wasn't very well received, and yet
I liked it. I thought it was strong.
Well, I thought it was a good production too. And yet we, you know, you never know about these things, but we do the best we can. Anyway, in answer to your question, I look at the people we have in the group, and I try to showcase, you know, our finest actors, and even the folks who might not be on you know, the top of our heap with regard to quality of skills and you know, the ability to carry a lead role or a show. But I try to give everybody an opportunity, and you know, just kind of column A, column B with the plays that I have known and loved over the past 30 years of being in the business, and those plays that I've always wanted to do but just haven't gotten around to it yet. And then taking a look at column B, which is all of our actors. So I try to pair up, you know, the nucleus of a, you know, possible cast with any given show, and you know, call one of the best directors in town and just proceed that way.
Yeah, well, that certainly seems to be working for you.
Yeah, it is.
Plus, I like the fact that you're still open to doing new plays. I mean, you did from one of your Tommy Lee Johnson's play, that Aura.
Yes.
I liked Aura a lot.
Yes. Tommy Lee Johnston and I have been buddies for a long time, and he began writing just a few years ago in earnest. He had dabbled 10 years ago, and, you know, nothing really came of it because you know how it is. You write a play and you put it in the drawer. But, you know, after a while, he just got better and better, and I said, you know, we have to do one of these. It's, you know, you're doing really good work, and you need to be seen on stage. So most recently, as you mentioned, Aura went up here back in April, directed by Jan, and Tommy Lee was in the lead role and was also the playwright.
Yeah, and that was great that he brought Jan in to direct.
Yeah, she had a really good eye for his work.
And it helps. And he was big enough to realize that you need someone else's input too.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure if he initially wanted to direct himself, but when Jan read the script and told him how much she liked it and what she thought of it in terms of, you know, the concept she was thinking about, he was really excited. So it was a really great marriage in that regard, and it was a really terrific production. It got Jeff recommended, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, as you said before about Lettuce and Lovage being in award territory, I wouldn't be surprised if Tommy Lee got a nomination for Best New Work.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely, charming play.
And there haven't been that many good plays on the non-ec level.
Okay. You
know, starting, so he certainly has a good shot. But I go back to when you did that Proving Mr. Jennings a couple of years ago.
Right.
How'd you find that play?
Well, my good buddy George Cedarquist brought it to us, courtesy of a friend of his with whom he had gone to secondary school in England. And George and James Walker, a budding young playwright in London.
Yeah, I've interviewed him through you guys for that play. Very sharp kid. Yeah.
Very bright young guy. Yeah. And he's probably in his mid to late 20s now and doing very well as kind of a, you know, young writer in residence at the National. So he's getting commissioned to do new work. But Proving Mr. Jennings was one of his early pieces. And we did that back in 2006. And it was really a very aggressive, exciting, you know, innovative piece of theater.
Yeah, yeah, so, I liked it a lot.
And, you know, I think at that time, Nina Metz, who's a pretty tough, has pretty high standards. She's a tough critic. She put it on her top five of the entire year at a storefront.
Wow.
So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, that's very nice. So you're open to new scripts.
Yeah, I mean, we usually do maybe one a year or one every other year, but usually it's a homegrown thing. George had a personal relationship with James, i.e. he went to school with him, and they were longtime buddies, so he really respected his work and felt it would be appropriate for a place like this, a small, intimate storefront theater. And indeed, it did work out. With regard to Tommy Lee, he's a part of our company, so we try to nurture, you know, people who are.
But then, you know, that brings in-house. Up that balance between creating art, doing something new, and still paying the bills and getting people to come out. Well, that's a tough line, isn't it?
Well, it is, absolutely. I mean, we have to do brand name plays typically just to bring in some revenue with the box office. In other words, when people see The Pillow Man, that sells itself. I mean, even if we did an average production of The Pillow Man, we'd still get, you know, patrons coming to see the play. The fact that we did a really good production of it, maybe even a great production.
I would say great production. And I'm not alone on this. You got across the board raves.
It's really been very well received. But the fact is that, you know, now that we have a brand name play and a really terrific production of it, you know, the door is just people are banging our door down. So anyway, the point is new work is always a risk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do take a risk occasionally.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And then you balance it with some cash cow, Arthur Miller's. And
absolutely.
And,
yeah,
Pillow Man, and let's talk about Equus from a couple of years ago.
Right, we're excited to remount that, and if all goes well, we will be putting that up in March and April, if the Pillow Man closes, you know, at some point. But you know, remember what Chris Jones said in his very popular article, "Never Close a Hit Show," in the Tribune a couple of years ago. So we'll run Pillow Man as long as we can. Then eventually we'll go up with our next show. And if Equus, if we're fortunate enough to produce Equus once again, we have Brian and Peter on board, the two terrific lead actors in our company. And we're just so excited to revisit that because it was such a great experience for us. That was our first big hit, as you know, after All My Sons, which sort of
His sons put you on the map.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Equus took us to a new level. And then The Pillow Man, of course, is taking it even further.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah.
Well, what are some of your plans for the future now?
Well, after Equus and then wrapping up with one or two more plays to round out 09-10, after Equus, possibly The Cripple of Inishman, another Martin McDonagh play.
Oh, I love that play.
And it's a lovely play. Yeah. Really very lyrical, beautiful piece of theater.
It is.
Kind of like an Irish postcard.
Yeah.
So wrapping up after Pillow Man, Equus, and then Cripple, probably wrap up the season with Incident at Vichy. That's on our schedule in any case.
Okay.
So we hope to.
Did I hear Misery in there?
Well, Misery had some issues with the rights. It turns out that Stephen King himself is contracting with another playwright whom he wants to adapt his play, his story, I should say.
But that's been done a few times around Chicago.
Well, yes, Simon Moore, the playwright, has told us just what I told you, that he himself has been in touch with Stephen King, and Stephen King no longer wants Simon Moore's play to be produced, but rather he wants another playwright to adapt it. And I'm not sure why, but
it was strong.
Right, it was very strong. Simon Moore did a great job of adapting King's original source material, and for some reason, Stephen King wants to go in a different direction than Simon Moore himself. In a recent email, said that his play is no longer available. We can't get the rights.
Wow.
Yeah, so we have to fill in something for the, you know, June time slot.
So what are your plans now?
Well, we hope to get the rights for Cripple.
Okay.
We applied for the rights, and dramatists recently called us back and said they're talking with McDonagh right now. So I think hopefully the success we've had with The Pillow Man will be some leverage for
us. Well, suggestion, too, get a hold of B.J. Jones at Northlight. He's buddies with him.
Well, they did a great production of Lieutenant of Inishmore.
Yeah. And he did that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's knows him very well. So maybe that'll help.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Because I could see you guys doing that. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful play, and I'd love to be able to do it in a small space.
Yeah.
There's such an intimacy and lyricism to it. I think it would work beautifully here.
What do you think is the magic of the smaller space? I mean, Pillow Man, you are literally inches away.
Right. Right. For me, it's just so compelling to be in the thick of things. When you see a story being played out in front of your very eyes and you can just reach out and touch the actors, there's just no substitute for that. It has such an intimacy and immediacy and emotional power that to me is the essence of Chicago theater. And that's what I was born and raised on, so to speak, as a young man in my 20s. When I'd come here as a corporate person in sales, in medical sales, with nary a hint of a theater background in my teens or early 20s. But in my late 20s, when I was exposed to an early Steppenwolf, A Young Remains, an Organic, all those seminal companies back in, around 1980, it was just incredible to see what they were doing. And their storefronts back then, as you remember.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes,
that was our space today.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to kind of follow in the footsteps of those who blazed that trail. And, you know, I loved what I saw back then. I said, I want to do that. So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, you're approaching that level.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
And as an actor, let me ask you, when you're this the audience is this close, do you get that feedback?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just on a high. As soon as you come on stage and the lights go up and there's people breathing on you, it's just so exciting.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we do it. That's why we're in this business.
Well, and now as a business, I know there's, since the economy's down, a lot of theater companies have struggled. I've gone to review some of the storefront shows. If it's not opening night with all their friends, it might be 5 or 6 people.
There. Right.
And how are you guys doing? Are you holding up?
We've experienced that. Yeah. We've had just a few bodies in the seats on occasion. It's really hard. I mean, this past year has been very challenging because of the recession. And, you know, we think at this point with Pillow Man, we're pulling out of it. But, you know, fortunately for us, after the difficulty of an average season last year in 2008-09, you know, we really...
Not an average in art.
Yeah, I think we did well with the productions on an artistic level, but... Yeah. You know, just generating revenue at the box office is a whole other story. You can have a really good production, but if people don't come, what does it matter?
Yeah.
So in any case, we wrapped up 2008-09 with Waiting for Godot, which was very successful artistically and commercially.
Yes. Oh, good.
And Jimmy McDermott directed that play. And as you know, he had been at Writers.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's a really terrific freelance director. And we were fortunate enough to have him here. And then, you know, kicking off and wrapping up that previous season with that show and doing very well with it, and then moving on to Lettuce and Love and Janelle Pillowman has been 3 in a row for us on a successful box office level, which is really you know, getting us back in good health.
Well, that's great. That's great. So you think you're over the hump now? You've survived.
Well,
so
you know,
far, huh?
We'll see what happens next production.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean,
that's true. But, I mean, in terms of this economy, because several theater groups are on the brink or not producing. I don't want to name any names, but I've seen a lot less shows this year. And going through some of my list, there's several theater companies that haven't done a show since summer.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to produce because you have that, you know, between $5,000 to $8,000 nut of expenditure with each and every show. And, you know, even though that doesn't sound like a lot of money, it's a lot for us. So it's
that much money to put on a show?
Yeah, I mean, we have a minimum budget of at least $5,000. And even though, you know, it can't compare to some of the bigger houses, it's challenging for us to do 6 shows a year. But, you know, when you talk about somebody not producing, it might be because they might be an itinerant company and they have to, you know, pay rent and find a space. For us.
Yeah, and they didn't have the money for it in a couple of cases. Yeah.
Right.
Or they took a bath on a show before and now they're trying to fundraise again before they put another one.
Right, and now it's a problem. But for us, we don't make any money if we don't produce.
Yeah.
So we're a resident theater company with a space for which we have to pay rent every month. So if we don't have anything going up, we have a problem.
Yeah.
So we try to fill our schedule 12 months a year, even with a summer show, with 6 main stage productions.
And you want to have a minimum of downtime, right?
Yes. We just have about, you know, 1 month of downtime between shows.
You have that much?
Yeah. Sometimes we only have a week or two.
Yeah.
Because of, for example, Steve Scott's schedule juxtaposed with Kimberly's. So when Steve wrapped up Lettuce and Lovage, we had to open up Pillow Man within 2 weeks to get both of them to work with us just because of their window was so narrow.
But that helps you because now you got revenue. You're not going a month without any revenue.
It was wonderful.
You ought to think about that more.
Right. We had a great...
If that can work out.
Well, it did.
Yeah, great.
It did. But it was very tight with regard to, you know, building the set and making sure everything was running smoothly.
That's true because you guys do some interesting sets. It isn't just a black box.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The set we have for this production by Anders Jacobsen and Judy Radovsky is really terrific.
Yeah.
They've outdone themselves with this production, and I'm sure they will be recognized.
Yeah.
It would be
a crime if they weren't. Yeah, it really would.
Yeah, I think they will.
Because, again, small space, but they used every inch of it.
They
beautifully.
Did.
Beautifully, yeah.
They did.
So you made in a little small theater, you made a big show.
We did. It's really a complicated production with the patrons' heads are turning left and right and center and, you know, just spinning around with all the stuff going on with, you know, there's an upstage, location and a downstage location and center stage, and it's every which way you turn.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us what Red Twist is going to be doing 5 years from now.
Oh boy, that's a good question. I think about that all the time, and I never come up with a you know, definitive answer.
Well, a direction.
Yeah, that's what we're after. We want a strategic approach to the next few years, and I think we're on the right track with regard to getting the best directors in town who have begun to say yes on a pretty regular basis, because when they do quality work in here, it lifts us up.
Sure.
And it enhances their own reputation. And I think somebody like Steve Scott enjoys coming here because, you know, he's
he told
used to
me that.
With
I've
Goodman,
asked. Yeah.
And this is kind of a treat for him because he's sort of on holiday at a little broom closet like us. So it works out for everybody. But I think we're going to stay the course with regard to getting really good directors and doing really good plays. I think we have a good ensemble with some serious A-list actors, and I think if we have that combination of a good core group of actors with really great guest artist directors coupled with the best plays over the past 30, 40 years, you really can't go wrong. For example, when we open up 10-11, Steve Scott has already agreed to come back and open up our third season in a row, and it's going to be A Delicate Balance. So,
wow, a really great play. Yeah.
Pulitzer Prize-winning play by Albee from 66.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though Virginia Woolf is his signature play, A Delicate Balance might be his best.
It might be.
So
it might. And the last good production we had, Remy Bumpo did it a few years back and did a dynamite production of it.
Well, I'm hoping to have a who's who of actors to do that one. I can't name names so far because I'm still talking to various people. But we're excited to get some really terrific actors for Steve for that show. And then Kimberly has given us a tentative yes for Death and the Maiden. And that would be after.
Tell us about. I don't know that.
Death and the Maiden is about I guess it was based on the Allende regime in Chile in the 70s. But it's, you know, the totalitarian state with torture and political intrigue. And it's not too dissimilar from some of the things that have happened, you know, globally over the past couple of years in our own modern era. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think that play is worth revisiting because back on Broadway in 1990, it was Gene Hackman as the bad guy, Richard Dreyfuss as the hubby, and Glenn Close as the wife.
Wow.
So that was a core group of – it's a three-person show, and I'm trying to get have it be a vehicle for Jacqueline Grant and Brian and possibly myself, but most likely Tommy Lee.
Okay.
So that would be a really terrific cast for that show.
Yeah.
And if Kimberly does indeed go forward with it, as she said she might – you know, provided she's not scooped up by Steppenwolf or the Goodman for that time frame.
Yeah, that's
then we'll have a great director.
Wow.
Yeah.
So are you thinking about moving to a bigger space eventually?
You know, we haven't done anything concrete in that regard, but Pillow Man puts us on a whole new level, and I really hate to see us be in a position to have a hit and have to turn away dozens of people per performance.
You could easily double the amount of people.
Well, we can. Yeah. We have 31 seats, and we have at least 50 or more people wanting to see it every night. And, you know, I know the Goodman has hundreds and hundreds per performance, but, you know, we're at where we're at, and it would be great to have a 50 or 70 seat house.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that. So I think we're, you know, I hate to say it, but I think we're losing money.
It's a shame, too, when there are so many shows struggling.
Right.
But I think you'll solve that problem.
Well, the extension will help.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I said, we extended for 6 more weeks to February 6th. And if we're fortunate enough to continue to have full houses, I think we'll do okay in the long run.
Well, it's a play that you can see a second time if you did see it once, because there's a lot going on. Oh, it's on a lot of levels.
It's filled with all kinds of thematic elements and really good, great twists and turns. And McDonough, of course, is just a brilliant writer.
Yeah,
and there's you know, the fruits of his work just continue to feed you every time you see it, and I think some people actually have seen it several times already.
Good.
And I think they'll come back.
Well, I
and the
recommend.
Same thing happened with Equus.
Yeah, yeah. The heavyweight plays. Sometimes if you've not seen them the first time around, you're overwhelmed. You get a lot out of it, but then the second time you start seeing it at another level, and those levels are there.
And you can really savor,
you
know, all of those elements the second and third time you see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really a very rich play. It's worth seeing more than once.
Well, last question, or one of the last questions, is, again, play selection. Do you pick the plays? How does Red Twist pick a play?
I do. I pick the plays. I just take a look at, you know, all the great plays that I've you know, known and loved over the years, and try to piece them together with the people in the ensemble to think that, you know, who might be the best candidate for a delicate balance or for a Death in the Maiden. And I just try to pair up column A with column B, like I said before. Okay. So, I mean, you know, I read the Tony Awards book of the past, you know, I think, what, the Tony Awards began in 47, right?
Right.
So I think they, you know, for the past 60-plus years now, you know, just reading the nominees and the award winners of you know, the Tonys over the years gives you a lot of different ideas. In addition, you look at the history of the Pulitzer Prize, and right now I'm reading a play from 1938 by Sherwood, and it's...
Sherwood's a great writer. Yeah.
And There Shall Be No Night, which is a buried treasure from a long time ago. And I'm not sure it would be ideal for us here, but I just found out that writer, within 5 years during the late 30s and early 40s, had three Pulitzer Prize winners.
Yeah.
Idiot's Delight, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, and There Shall Be No Night. So...
Yeah, that's worth visiting.
Right. It's like, okay, who is this guy?
What about some comedies like Neil Simon?
We've thought about Prisoner of Second Avenue, and even though it's an old war horse, it's a wonderful play, and it would be a great vehicle for somebody, you know, such as Brian and Jan, and I think they would do a great job with it. So, you know, that would be a great play for Steve Scott. So, you know, to have him come in here and do that with Brian and Jan would be a thrill. So, I would love to do that. And, you know, a lot of Neil Simon's work, as funny as it is very dramatic and touching.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, his trilogy,
Lost in Yonkers, Rumors, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, that is good stuff.
Yeah, but typically we don't do all that many comedies. You know, for example, Lettuce and Lovage was just a rarity, just to do a flat-out comedy like that. Yeah. But that, too, is very touching. So, you know, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
You know, you can call McDonough's Pillow Man a comedy, but it's pretty freaking dramatic, too.
Yeah, pretty dark for comedy. That's so true. And what about you personally? Are you going to continue to act when you feel it's appropriate?
Well, sure. You know, I mean, years ago when I was plugging myself into things here and there on a regular basis without too much consideration of would I or would I not be the best candidate for the role, I've gotten a little bit more discerning about those things, and I no longer have the luxury of saying, oh, sure, I'd be great for that. You know, I mean, I have a responsibility to make sure I'm putting the best people in the best position. So, I'll certainly continue to be on stage, but, you know, when you have a group of people like we have, it might be infrequently.
Well, that's part of the growth, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good problem to have.
Yes, definitely.
Well, you're to be congratulated, because I think Red Twist has proven you guys are belong on the map, and it's showing with the quality of work and the fact that all these top directors are coming and working for you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I'd like to thank you for your support from day one, coupled with the fact that you fill a really important need, Tom. I don't know if you're aware of this, but everybody who is in our position really appreciates you coming to the opening nights religiously, as you do, and getting a review up within 24 hours so that we can get something out to the public. So I really appreciate that.
Well, it's my way of giving back for all the great nights of theater I've had. So,
well, thanks.
And as long as you guys keep producing great shows, we'll still be out here.
Well, please keep coming.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, folks. And thanks for listening. And go see a play this week.